Welcome everyone to Iterate. I'm Renee Ritchie, and joining me today is a plethora of amazing design talent. First of all, our regular co-host, Mark Edwards, who is still live at whatever's left of WWDC. How are you, Mark?
I'm pretty good. I like that I'm the first name mentioned after that amazing intro. I'm not sure I feel worthy, but that's good.
Please, you're way too modest. Also joining us, Lauren Brichter, who you may know from applications like Tweety and Letterpress. How are you, Lauren?
Good. How are you?
Very good. And congratulations on your second Apple Design Award. You have bookends now.
Yeah, thank you.
Also joining us, Sebastian DeWitt, who's done a score of really well-known iOS apps, now working at DoubleTwist. How are you, Seb?
Doing good.
And last but certainly not least, Dave Wiskus, well-known for the Unprofessional podcast and now for the app Vesper. How's it going, Dave?
Hello.
So I guess we're going to jump right in, Mark, and I'll let you get the first word in. iOS 7, Apple showed it off during the keynote at WWDC. They've put it all over Apple.com. Where do you want to start?
It's a little bit difficult to know where to start. Maybe we start with the lock screen, because that's the first thing you see. Obviously, there's a lot of positive engineering changes in iOS, but I think the stuff we're likely to talk about most on this podcast, the design changes. So the lock screen's an interesting one. We now have, what, five gestures on the lock screen? Thinner fonts, less information, looks cleaner, looks nicer, but maybe it doesn't work as well. Should we run around the room and see what everyone's opinion is on the lock screen?
I don't get it. There's too much stuff going on here. I'm looking at, I've got iOS 7 installed on an iPod Touch, and man, I there's just too much stuff going on here.
It looks confused.
So we have what? Swipe left to right to unlock, swipe from the top edge for notification center, swipe from bottom up for control center, swipe from the bottom up on the right-hand side for the camera, and slide from right to left does nothing, and it could have probably been used for unlock as well, so maybe for left-handed users.
Yeah, but if you did that for unlock, then it makes it really easy to accidentally unlock in your pocket.
Yeah, that's a valid point. I don't know. I guess that's the kind of thing that you'd have to test to see how often it happens, and if, because obviously the swipe gesture has to, or the slide gesture has to travel a certain distance. So maybe you could stop that by making sure the distance is quite long, which maybe has already been done and with us since day one with the iPhone.
My wallpaper moves. I'm just sitting here doing nothing, and the spot's moving all over my wallpaper.
You know, I mean, one nice thing about it, and you know, I have a list of stuff I could nitpick. You know, in the old lock screen, you would drag a thing that wasn't the thing that it was eventually going to disappear. And this one, you're literally moving the screen away. You know, it's direct interaction at its best.
Yep, that's definitely a great thing.
So, but for example, I can pull up Control Center, and if I move my thumb a little bit to the right, I can pull up the camera, and those are both from the bottom of the screen.
Yeah, not to mention the fantastic little chevron that's sitting right under the slide to unlock, which made me think, oh, now we're just sliding up instead of to the side, despite the gradient that's animating there. I hope they find a better, like, sort of affordance there.
One thing I do find interesting, Lauren, and this is, you know, right in your wheelhouse, is previous versions of iOS, it looked like all the animations, all the physics was animated, like someone just keyframed it and said, bounce like this. But now it seems like, you know, the faster you do it, the more it bounces. It seems like there's actual physics behind the interactions.
Oh, yeah. I mean, pre-canned animations are kind of my personal pet peeve. So this is, I mean, that, forgetting about the visual redesign, the interaction design, the physics stuff. I mean, I'm super excited about that.
How does it hold up to you? I mean, does it feel like they got close to it? Apple was very careful not to say physics because they didn't base it on Earth physics, but they did model it to be sort of a set of laws unto themselves.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's legit physics, acceleration, forces, all, the whole nine yards. I mean, basically, it's just a different coordinate system. You know, they define everything in terms of screen points rather than, I don't know, meters. But other than that, it should be pretty much identical.
Does it feel good to you guys? Do you think that they nailed that part of the interaction at least?
I think using the word nailed right now is dubious.
Are there the right
bones?
Are there the right bones and springs and struts, at least workable
I think they did. I think the physics stuff is great. I'm completely there with Lauren on this. I think it's a really positive thing, and it's something that will be certainly a larger part of interaction design for the future, probably forever. And I think that's it's almost a shame that some of the other the design is really detracting from some of the really positive things that have been done. So yeah, I think that the physics is good. But you know, the lock screen is a great example of something where we're definitely two steps forward, where we're grabbing the entire display to swipe pretty much anywhere on the display. I think you can swipe to unlock, which is great. And visually, I think it looks better. But it's a real shame that there's still a whole lot of confusion and real just thoughtlessness, which is apparent certainly with the arrow, the chevron at the bottom of the display. That just seems very confusing.
It seems like it's weird that there's one bit of text there, which is slide to unlock, and it's the only thing really that needs an arrow and doesn't have one. It would make so much more sense for that to have an arrow telling me which direction to slide to unlock. I guess the animation, the gloss animation there, kind of indicates, but if you've never used an iPhone before, you're at a disadvantage.
Do they even need the text?
Yeah.
Just an arrow would be fine. Well, this is one of those weird things, and I'm sort of jumping in. This is one of those weird things where they've gone from having glyphs for so many things to keep it the universal to now they're putting text everywhere instead of having glyph buttons.
Yeah, that seems like a philosophical thing in a new iOS. It's very true what you said.
Before we move past the lock screen, and you know, again, this kind of goes to you, Lauren. It seems like a lot of iOS in general, especially with the physics, is more gamified. It's fun to play. I mean, you told us a story last time about how you kept playing with the elastic band scrolling, and that's how you came up with pull to refresh. In this, I just keep swiping to watch stuff bounce around, and it seems like all this stuff now is really playful when before it was sort of static screens.
Yeah, I mean, it's you could build UIs that are a ton more fun, but I think it's even more important than that. You know, it's how we're engineering these interfaces. You know, if we have a physics engine that's backing all of the animations and all of the interactions, you know, it eliminates an entire class of programming errors. You know, normally when, like, if you were to program a UI like this the old-fashioned way, you would have to enumerate every possible state that the interface would be in. And, you know, there's no way a programmer can handle that all. You know, if instead you build a generic physics system and then just define everything in terms of that, you can build UIs that are way more complex, but way simpler at the same time. It's hard to describe, but it's a really powerful technique.
One last question before I move on, and I'm sorry to dwell on the lock screen so much, but I used Palm a lot. I've used BlackBerry 10 a little bit. And with those, you just kind of swipe up to get into things, or swipe up to get into multitasking, swipe up to get through layers. Here we have swipe up going into Control Center, swipe left generically going into the actual phone, and swipe from bezel left in some of the apps going back layers. I'm hoping that this gets more consistent, but it seems like it's almost testing user familiarity with gestures at this point.
Yeah, I mean, the swipe in from the left, and you know, you know me, I love the swipey panels, but it seems to me that that's kind of hinting at the hardware that's going to come. Because right now, you know, swiping from the edge of the screen, you know, it's a sharp edge. It kind of hurts your finger. You can almost picture a really rounded iPhone that makes that gesture really natural.
Yeah, agreed.
Even more chamfering on the edges.
But while we're talking about swipe gestures from the edge of the screen, it seems like while there's some great functionality in Control Center, it's possibly a bad thing for some third-party apps, or even first-party apps where we've now lost the swiping from the bottom, whereas we only had swiping from the top previously with Notification Center. So it's obviously there's benefit there, but it feels like maybe Control Center could have been part of Notification Center. I don't know.
I run into it a lot in games, to be honest. Like, I tried it out a little bit, and then with a lot of games where you do some like frantic swiping, like you said, it perhaps could have been a better solution for that. But right now, it seems like it's a bit of a gesture minefield sometimes.
I want to know what the line is. Is Apple declaring that, at first it was you couldn't do downward gestures from the top because that would open Notification Center. Now we're seeing other gestures that are going to be system-wide. At what point does Apple just say, you know what, screw you guys, you don't get gestures anymore, we're going to take over all of this?
theoretically, this could be a solved problem. I mean, didn't WebOS extend the touch lattice like beyond the bounds of the screen where you could actually perform gestures outside?
Yeah, they had a gesture area, and you could do backswipes and you could swipe up to get cards and then swipe up again to get the launcher.
I mean, that would be fantastic and wouldn't interfere with any app.
Well, they should have a gesture button that you hold down on the phone and then you perform those gestures.
Well, the PlayStation Vita has this thing where the whole backside is actually touch sensitive, and it's only like sensitive in some specific like applications where it makes sense. I would personally think that would be a really cool addition to the phone as usable hardware, like not always on, but it's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, I'm with you in theory, but I think so much of the appeal to me is that direct manipulation. You touch a thing and you pull it down, you're dragging the screen. If I'm just like rubbing the back, then I'm massaging hardware. That feels a little weird to me.
I agree. But with modern graphics, you can actually see this really cool sort of direct, kind of feel like you visualize your fingers being behind it. It's kind of nice.
If you use that would be cool.
Yeah, you can sort of press through the material. It looks really cool.
So, Mark, if we go through the lock screen and into the home screen, we now have this effect where you have the layer of the wallpaper, then the layer of the icons. Sorry, the wallpaper, then you have the mask for the dock, then the layer of the icons, then you have the notifications on top of them. And as you tilt the phone, they kind of all move in a parallax effect. Is that effective for you?
Yeah, I love the parallax. I think it's a really nice, it's a neat trick. And it kind of adds to the mental model of how the UI is constructed. I think it's a nice touch. I'm not sure about, initially I wasn't sure about where Spotlight is, drag down for Spotlight, but now I actually think that's I don't mind that's harder to find because it's more of a pro feature. So it kind of doesn't matter if my mum can't find that. Not ideal, but I think maybe being able to get there from every screen could be a really, really good thing.
Yeah, I mean, the parallax is interesting only because this is nitpicky, but I can't quite tell how they're rounding. Are they rounding to retina pixels? I mean, it would have made the most sense for me to keep springboard icons fixed and only move the background, but it seems like both are moving.
Yeah, both move. Mm-hmm. Which yes, that makes sense. But the interesting side effect of that is I think because they're moving the icons, it makes the icons look like they're actually above the display. So maybe you're right. Maybe the best way to do that is lock the icons so they are the base level, and the wallpaper moves behind in the opposite direction, and the alerts on top move the other way.
Yeah, I mean, they found that with 3D movies, you only wanted to project 3D back from the screen, like never bring anything forward because it would make people sick.
Oh, is that why that is?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this is not LG tried actual 3D displays and they went absolutely nowhere. And this is more of a simulated 3D. And I'm wondering how much people will take to it.
I can tell you, I slept through the keynote and I wasn't paying a whole lot of attention that day. And that that night, Lex Friedman handed me his phone so I could see iOS 7 for the first time. And I pulled the phone up close to my face so I could look down, like stare at pixels and look at details. And as I tilted the phone, I saw the Starfield move. I didn't know it was going to do this. I hadn't heard about the parallax. Watching it happen, like my face lit up. I was so, I don't know. It was like they should have sent a poet.
Well, at the keynote, I mean, when they did the demo and they tilted the phone and the effect was, it was super magnified because of the size of the screen. People were going, ooh, and ah. I mean, that was a real kid playing a video game moment.
I think it's super cool, if only because it highlights right now how much our tools for making user interfaces have become detached from the actual user interfaces out there. Like right now, there's pretty much nothing a designer can use to make something like this. And it's super awesome. At the same time, it highlights for me a problem which we have in the industry where, yeah, I think I saw a tweet like this sometime last week, like, you're in a cutting edge field when there's just no tools out there that can produce the kind of stuff that you're working on. A single tool at least.
It speaks to me of the chasm right now, and it breaks down into two categories with iOS 7, the way it feels and the way it looks. And I think that the way it feels is so charming, but the way it looks is not. It feels
keep going.
It's very much not the same degree of joy and happiness that I get out of the way it feels. It feels great, but it looks so wispy. It looks so breakable. It looks like I'm gonna hurt something. My phone suddenly feels frail.
Yeah, and I think trust is a very important part when you're building user interfaces. It's a very delicate balance to make something feel playful and delightful, but not fragile and poorly strung together. So maybe now's a good time to talk about the scrolling in the Messages app. While I think that's a really nice demo of what iOS 7 is capable of doing, I actually don't think I like that one as much as some of the other nice animation touches and physics touches.
You mean bubbles that bounce?
Yeah. To me, that just makes it feel like it's not solid.
It's jiggly.
Yeah, it's a small gripe. I'm sure we all have larger complaints. I'd happily live with that, but
it's like a bowl of jelly, too jiggly.
Yeah, and I'm not sure many interfaces probably want to be like a bowl of jelly. Some might, and it might be the right choice, but
I don't want this much jiggle in my UI.
They're probably just showing off a bit.
Yeah, which is fine. I think that's okay. And then, you know, they can turn it out later.
Yeah.
So they removed all, people say they removed the skeuomorphism, but I think the term is too loosely applied. They removed things like the green felt, and they even made jokes about it, like this calendar doesn't need stitched leather to stay on your screen, or no virtual cows were hurt in the making of this interface, which is all fine and good, but they added a lot of real world feel to it because it's got physics and because it's got objects that you directly manipulate and because, you know, you can pull screens off or you can drag dials around what looks like a virtual cylindrical surface. Sort of like what you mentioned, Lauren, when you talked to us about letterpress, that your skeuomorphism was in the interactions and not in the look of it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, skeuomorphism is anything. I mean, at least to me, it's anything that's unnecessary, but it makes it more human. To a degree, they took all of the visual skeuomorphism and put it into animations, which is great. But they probably went a little too far. Even something subtle like shadows. You know, in letterpress, like I use subtle shadows here and there, and I think they helped. I think the parallax effect would be that much cooler if the icons just had really, really subtle, super blurry shadows behind them.
So, Mark, you and Brad were talking about the icons. They've changed. I mean, even just eyeballing them, they look bigger and not differently rounder.
Yeah. Well, they are bigger, and they are now. I think they're super ellipses. I think that's the correct term. Although super ellipse covers a whole range of stuff. I think that was a great change. That was it's really nice. I think the actual home screen, the grid that we have with the icons now is far nicer. It's just a shame about the icons themselves. That's where I think most of the complaints lie. I think people have no issue at all with the 60-point icons.
Do you want to get into that then? I mean, Apple, they've shown it on Apple.com. It's not a secret. They showed it in the keynote. There's a whole new slew of icons for Apple's first-party built-in apps, and they range from things which I think are fairly uncontroversial and fairly finished, like the Photos app, to things that are hugely controversial and look very unfinished, or at least very not designed in a typical Apple way. And Dave, I mean, you're a visual designer, so is Seb. What was your first take on these?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like I'm looking at somebody's sketches. This is a rough draft. It's really hard to comment on it.
Like a wireframe.
Yeah, wireframe is a really great word. It's you look at the iTunes Store, App Store icons on the home screen, and they just look like, well, these are placeholders, and we're going to get to this eventually, but we've been working on this other stuff first. And it's just so hard to commit any real emotion to, I don't know, it's just, I can't get a reaction. It's too early.
Yeah, it's funny. I like saw this just one image at one point on the next web, like on the web, like this was this article image where they showed like the keynote screen with this really nice press photo of this nice angle with all the keynote presenter displays and stuff. And it's this giant blown up Safari icon from iOS 7 on it. And it just looked like one of those sort of funny Photoshops, you know, where you're like, oh, look at this ridiculous design they showed off. And the thing is, that's the actual icon right now. It just doesn't have that kind of, you know, sense of like, I mean, Apple has such a legacy in iconography, you know, like from Susan Kare all the way to these blowing everybody out of the water with macOS 10's first like super nice realistic icons to sort of, you know, defining the shape of app icons with iOS. And now they just showed us something off that was, I think, to us, especially as visual designers, really unrefined compared to their previous work. That, yeah, like you definitely want to think that, hey, this is probably not what they're going to ship with. Historically speaking, though, typically they show off pretty final icons at WWDC. So, yeah, my fingers are crossed.
You say typically, but I think that iOS 7 is so divergent from everything that's come before that there's no way this could be final. There's no way, in my mind, it makes perfect sense that they would show us something that is going to change dramatically between now and ship date.
I definitely hope so. And I know that they listen to all critiques, so you know, I'm glad that people like Never Mergen, like today, wrote, you know, it's cool that the guys invented a grid, you know, that they showed off a grid during the keynote, but the grid is wrong.
I mean, that's a good point. They made this, and to that point, they made a grid where basically they made a square from the center of the super ellipse corners, and they a circle within that, and they started fitting things like the Safari icon. And to me, that's sort of like making the Apple logo on the t-shirt go from shoulder to shoulder, in that, yes, it fits the grid, but it's the weighting is entirely wrong.
Is there a nuance?
Yeah, we're like putting a serif font on a grid instead of, you know, putting it over the grid slightly so the overall weight of the font looks properly aligned. It looks like, I don't know if this is fair or unfair, Seb, but it looks like no one stopped and eyeballed it at the end.
Yeah. And to be honest, like, I feel like it's a lot of it has to do with sort of defining the system first and then trying to work within it. Like, perhaps it's what, you know, what Dave said. It's, you know, just trying to get something together quick, and it's kind of like a first draft of it rather than, you know, the refined end product, because I haven't really found a designer yet that said, no, this, you know, these icons look good to me, or like this, yeah, this is great. I think there's just enough work left to be done if that's going to be the final grid.
Well, there's visual hints all over the place in iOS 7 of like a to be continued sort of vibe under construction. The fact that the status bar and the nav bar run together all over the place now, I think it's such a weird decision to me that I look at that and I think this must be placeholder. They're going to do something here. They just haven't done it yet.
You know, I don't mind the two running together. What bothers me is the fact that they went full black on the like actual status bar contents. You know, why not just fade that way out? You know, you know where the stuff is. You know, you just don't want it to be so prominent.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think my problem with the status bar being the way it is that the status bar should go away. The status bar should fade into the hardware, not become a part of the app.
Yeah. I mean, I'm actually looking at the iOS 7 page on Apple now, and it's curious that they used white hardware for every single screenshot. Yeah.
They also were very careful. Yeah. I mean, if you look at the iOS page or the keynote, there are certain built-in apps that just aren't present on the beta yet. And there's built-in apps that Apple's not showing off yet. And that, to me, lends credence to exactly what you guys are saying, that this is maybe more alpha 8 than beta 1. It's just they had to get it done, and this was what they had done by WWDC time.
Do you really think that whatever designer is in charge of the UI for notes in iOS 7 is looking at their work and thinking, yep, this is done?
No, I'm sure they had the same exact debate that we're having right now, you know, internally.
I hope, and I hope that past tense doesn't stick.
And let's talk about some of the screenshots show like notes, the contrast yellow on white. One of my favorite art teacher used to say, if you can't hold your work up, you know, several feet away and still figure out what it is, then you're lacking contrast. And this seems to me to be one of the lowest contrast versions of iOS to date.
Yeah, what about those little hairline icons everywhere, like the actual, you know, action bar / toolbar icons that are super, super thin lines with really thin fonts? It's like really hard to read. And I mean, weather, if it's sunny out, it's ironically not legible in the sun.
And that's for people without, you know, accessibility issues.
Yeah, definitely. And just to get back to the hairline icons, even the bookmarks icon in Safari, the actual curvature of the pages, you know, it is a book. It's so small that it's very difficult to even tell what it is. So the contrast and contrast of caricature of icons just seems to be dialed way, 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 way too low. I think there's going to be some serious accessibility issues for people who even people have perfectly healthy vision.
Everything's made out of these super thin lines, and when it's high contrast, it looks okay, but most of the time the OS aesthetic is still so bright and sunny, it ends up looking like, I don't know, the IKEA version of Tron.
I know that non-retina is dead to you, Dave, but I mean, this is theoretically going to go on the iPad mini, which is non-retina, and these thin lines are going to have to show up in really low-density screens.
Right. That's like, what, 1 pixel width? But the truth is, we haven't seen an iPad version of this yet. We don't know what it's going to look like. We don't know what it's going to feel like. Don't know what's really going to happen. If if I were Apple, I would be charging ahead so much on iOS, at least with Retina, that I would immediately at the first possible juncture drop non-Retina even on the iPad mini. Like, just get a new one out and don't support the old one. You're going to piss a lot of people off, but it's the best way forward. That said, if it helps to save us from this overly wispy noodle design, I'd kind of be okay with it.
Seb, I saw you on Twitter mention, you know, they're using Helvetica Ultra Thin when they could have been, by now at least, using a custom font. Do you think there's an advantage on making a system-specific font still?
Yeah, and I think it was just kind of funny to see. Well, funny, a little bit disappointing to me at least, that all these companies by now have different custom fonts drawn specifically for the user interfaces. And if you take typography seriously, which, you know, if you ask a lot of typographers, like, what do you think about Helvetica on the iPhone pre-ultralight? They said it's you know, it looks nice. The graphic design-wise, it checks out. It looks beautiful. But legibility-wise, it's not great. And it could just be a lot better. If you look at Windows Phone, has like a sort of a myriad Frutiger-like custom font called Sego UI. Androids have two custom font families now, Droid Sans and Roboto. Mm-hmm. The Baby Roboto is pretty crappy, but, I mean, it's designed for screens. And Palm had this beautiful sort of Avenir-like typeface, which I think everybody was hoping iOS would get. And now we just get something which is actually less legible than the last last typeface we had with the system. And it's kind of a disappointment to me, at least, because I've heard some like stories in the grapevine that they've been working on like a custom, more humanist font family, more like Avenir, more like, you know, Sego, and to see that what I presume to be people who really value the aesthetic pick Helvetica over that. Yeah, it's really too bad.
Yeah, I mean, Helvetica New Ultralight also just seems kind of lazy to me. I mean, it's impossible to set text in it and not make it look sexy. You know, it's a gimmick.
until you put it up in the nav bar as a button and you put one of those weird chevrons next to it and you don't center it properly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, sure.
Yeah, so David, what's your take on text as buttons? I mean, the pitch was that it was faster for humans to understand text overall than it was to understand a wide range of glyphs, but it seems not to be as robust when you're handling things like German, which, you know, has 90 letter things for everything. And also, like you said, it's like a web link, but it's not underlined. It just seems like a lot of issues or a lot of collision potential.
So here's what we'll do. We'll take two signs. One is a red octagon. And the other one just says stop. which of these things is the better idea?
Yeah. We have this visual language that's been developed over, you know, I guess the entire time the human race has been in existence, and a lot of these things seem like good ideas. I don't know why. I think this is something that they will have to revert on. They just have to do 180. Degree. And the thing is, there's plenty of glyphs in iOS 7 anyway, so it's not like they're not using them. I think the nav bar, the frameless text for buttons in the nav bar is probably the poorest thing on iOS 7. That's the thing that upsets me the most. It's really, really quite terrible and careless. And I just don't see any other option apart from actually reverting to the way it was in iOS 6, even if stylistically it looks a little bit different. I love the back buttons in iOS 6. They're great.
Yeah, the iOS back buttons in general have been fantastic up until now. And it's funny because on Vesper we did the chevron with the word thing as a back button, and we decided it was too far outside of what iOS should be. It wasn't iOS-y enough, so we threw it out. So seeing it in the keynote was kind of a well crap. apparently that was plenty iOS-y enough.
Yeah, but it's not Android in a sense. It's very much like the way Android applies the hierarchy control.
I want a capsule. I want to know where my buttons are, to an extent. I mean, there's gonna be times where that works and times when it doesn't. But the nav bar now, especially because it sort of blends into the content and it definitely blends into the status bar, you don't have a clear sense of what is what. It's just like the lock screen problem all over again, where you've got these different zones that you can do different things with and you can interact with them in different ways, but without clear definition. You're kind of guessing and checking, and you have to develop a familiarity before it makes sense. And that's sort of antithetical to what iOS has been up until this point, where it's been really easy to pick it up and go.
And the awesome thing about having that definition, it actually changes the way the user interacts when they know the touch size, or they have a pretty good idea of the touch size. If you, if you just try this as an experiment, you build something and you make it look like the tap, the object they have to the user has to tap is really, really small, you'll find people really struggle to actually tap it, or they'll take a lot longer to do it rather than actually having a very, very generous button size, i.e., you know, 44 points high and wide, like Apple usually recommend. It just makes the user interface feel easier and people feel like they can navigate around faster. So I think they've lost a lot of that by... So I'm assuming the tap regions are probably identical. It's probably just as usable in terms of tap zones, but it just feels a lot less usable because things feel like they're kind of just harder to navigate and harder to actually aim at.
Right. And typically on a nav bar or a toolbar in iOS, the tap zone is going to be the full height of the bar.
Yeah.
Even if the button or the glyph doesn't take up that space. And now it's weird because it's just text. And so what I keep doing is I keep aiming for the text. And the text is so thin, there's like this weird Fitz's Law problem where I'm trying to find the right pixel to tap instead of just hitting the area that I think should be the button.
Lauren, do you think more gestures could help with this? I mean, you did a bunch of them in letterpress, but do you think a consistent back gesture would kind of obviate the need to have that back button there all the time?
Eventually. I mean, they have the side edge gesture now, but I mean, you need the back button, I think, as training wheels, at least for the next couple of years until people really get used to it. But yeah, I mean, I think that would be great.
Well, there's the accessibility concerns. You need a button.
Why?
Well, you need something that would indicate, I mean, how...
Unless it's just system-wide default, Dave, that whenever you slide sideways, yeah, it just always goes back.
Yeah, I mean, like blind users, they you have to learn how to use a voiceover before you can actually use the phone. Like, you would just know the standard back gesture.
Yeah. Also, the question of what are you going back to?
Yeah, and that's tough because I think, you know, that's one of the things that frustrates me the most about Android is that the back button is sometimes a random action generator, and they expect developers to use an API to sort of give it sanity, and that's never good. But
yeah, no, I'm not proposing an Android model. Like I like the app silo model, and then maybe once you get back to the root of an app, you know, it'll bounce back into what is it, the multitasking view now?
Yeah, what do you guys think of that?
WebOS.
Yeah. I mean, WebOS is the most successful unsuccessful operating system in history now.
It actually had the coolest back interaction ever, right? I mean,
yes.
As a designer on Android, it infuriates me that we literally on Android, you have a back button and an up button. The back button actually takes you out of apps. The up button moves you through a hierarchy through an app. Now, how does that make sense to any user? It's like, oh, right, I have to press this because this one doesn't control the hierarchy of this. No, come on. It makes no sense.
But I like – it's interesting because WebOS was – for those not familiar with it, they had – Mobile Safari had these pages since the first version of iOS. And WebOS basically took that and made it the entire system-wide OS model. So instead of just having web pages sideways, you could – originally there was a button, but you could swipe up and get this card view of all your apps. And every instance, for example, if you had two emails going, each email would be a separate card. Each web page would be a separate card. And they would update live. And in later versions, you could even stack them so that all the cards you used for a certain workflow or a certain thing could be stacked together. And that's relatively sophisticated, but it's a very easy to understand metaphor because almost everyone has played with cards. Now from, you know, BlackBerry 10 to iOS, you get the multitasker, which is just the card part of that view. And it's nice because you can put, you know, three fingers on and throw three cards away at the same time, for example. It's much easier than the little, you know, hold the button down and hit the X's. But it looks like home screen is one of the cards. I don't know if you'll be able to throw a home screen away or not. And you just can move side to side with them. And I'm with nice physics, but I'm not sure it's as complete a model as WebOS had.
Yeah, the simplicity of WebOS was incredibly admirable because no app had any back buttons or no navigation buttons anywhere. So there was never, I mean, in fact, most of the devices didn't even have any buttons on the front of the device. It was just a touch-sensitive area below the screen and the app, the content. That was it. And that was pretty cool.
Yeah, and it seemed like simpler. This way, I do think it shows you more, but at least from the demos, they're not dynamically updated. I don't think they showed a movie or any video in one of the things, but it didn't seem like anything was moving around in the multitasking tiles.
I'm sure it'll get better over the years, but yeah, I agree it's still slightly inconsistent. Yeah, I mean, iOS is getting old at this point. They still have to support a ton of legacy stuff.
Yeah, they're dragging hundreds. They have the Windows problem. They're dragging hundreds of millions of users who are, you know, used to an app grid launcher system behind them.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good problem to have, I suppose. But I guess they can't move as fast as some people want them to.
Are the layers better, Mark? Because before, people would criticize them for using Linen, you know, on top for Notification Center, underneath for the Fast App Launcher or folders. Is at least the layering more sensible now?
Yeah, that seems like something they've spent a lot of time getting right, which is fantastic. And I definitely think the App Switcher is far better in iOS 7. That's one of those things that it's an absolute win. Maybe it isn't as far as good as the Palm Pre and Palm OS and Web OS, but it's certainly fantastic. Just while we're on the topic of the home screen and the App Switcher, I didn't get a chance to comment on the icons before. I'm kind of struggling to give any kind of feedback, and I think we do need to be speaking about this stuff publicly because Apple needs to know everyone's opinion, because it's the only way they're going to improve. I don't know that I have much feedback on the icons, except they're so poor that I struggle to even consolidate some thoughts on them. I definitely think the issue is begins with the grid and ends with the execution. And I really do hope that the icons are just a reflection of the lack of time they had to put them together. So it's, yeah, I mean, I realize they do have a bit of time, and that's probably an easy thing that they can fix. But I think it's something that they should be looking at. And if they don't, it seems like it's something they would have to improve for iOS 8.
It makes me wonder. I look at things like those icons, and is this them going so far in one direction that when they ease back, it feels better?
Yeah, could. What's it called? Anchoring when you're selling something?
New Coke.
Yeah. The thing is, they actually had such a great language in iOS 6 that I felt like they could have easily picked a midpoint that would have been met with adoration and cheers rather than the current reaction that seems like most icon designers or even users, developers, whatever. Seems like most of the feedback on the icons has been pretty negative.
What happens when people who run iOS 6, normal people, they turn on their phone, it's got the little thing that says they've got an update, and they go to update it, and suddenly it's iOS 7. It's so much of a departure. If they didn't know that was coming, if they weren't prepared for it, that sounds like a support nightmare.
Does it? They need a Zelda walkthrough, Dave? Is that what you're saying? This is what's going to happen to your phone.
And this is actually a point Justin Williams brought up during lunch yesterday. So I want to make sure he gets credit for this, but he said it's going to be worse than Maps, where people suddenly find themselves dropped in the middle of this wispy Helvetica Neue Lite, extra light interface that doesn't make sense to them anymore, and they're going to freak out.
Well, I mean, it is spatially similar, right? So, I mean, like all your icons, like your phone icon will be where your phone icon was. Your music icon will be where your music icon was. And they did sort of stress that they changed the look of it, but they tried to keep the anchor points the same so that people wouldn't be lost initially.
Yeah, it's easy to say that. It's way harder to hand somebody an iPhone running iOS 7 and have them just understand what's going on. I have zero confidence that I could install iOS 7 on my mom's phone and have her be happy. We were joking during WWC because typically, like, if somebody leaves their phone out and they go to the bathroom, you open up their Twitter client and you tweet pooping from their phone. And this year, the joke was that the real mean thing to do would be to install iOS 7 while they were in the bathroom.
Seb, do you feel the same way as Mark, and that, you know, this, I don't want to put words in anybody's mouths, but do you think this could do with a, you know, human interactive design pass on a lot of this stuff?
Yeah. I think it's, it really kind of boggles the mind, like the way it is treated right now, visually. Now, I think there's just kind of different ways of dealing with it. I've seen a lot of people be like, I could just redesign this to be better in no time, you know, and just put up like whole mock-ups of it being different. But, I can't quite consolidate it with my view of what Apple's creative output is as it stands. And, that's hard.
Some people have said that we're just change adverse, that people who are used to iOS looking one way are now just upset that it's looking another way and we'll get over it. But to me, it seems like first the quality of people and the types of people who are upset about it sort of resonates that. And the reasons that they're upset are not because the icons are different, but because of design principles behind the differences.
Oh, yeah. It's just a huge lack of refinement in most of the design. That's very apparent.
I mean, even just on this show, Seb does a ton of Android stuff, and I work on an app that is very much a departure from a lot of normal things on iOS, and we ripped a lot of those ideas off from Lauren, who also does a lot of things that weren't iOS standard. I don't think that anyone on this Skype call right now is feeling super in love with everything that Apple does and is afraid of change.
Yeah, right. I think the new Mac Pro is an embodiment of that. Most of the people I've spoken to, well, I don't think I've spoken to anyone who said anything negative about it. And there's been a ton of stuff that's been removed. We don't have card slots. We don't have all this other stuff. There's less expansion. There's the new Mac Pro could, from certain perspectives, be seen as worse. There's no doubt about it. However, I think they got everything right, and everyone I've spoken to about it wants to get one, even if they haven't bought a desktop in the last I don't know how many years. So that was just completely knocked out of the ballpark, and it's completely different. So I don't think it's that we're change adverse, and I think we've all certainly had enough time to let this stuff sink in to understand that there's many great things about iOS 7, but some of the work just feels careless and really terrible.
Lauren, I wanted to ask you, what do you think of there's a ton of Gaussian blur going on here, and I'm guessing that's OpenGL, and I'm guessing there's a lot of, you know, computation going on there. What do you think of that as a persistent UI metaphor?
I mean, I love the look of the blur. It pains me as a graphics engineer to imagine what the GPU must be going through. I mean, it must be weeping behind the scenes.
I like you have GPU sympathy. That's fantastic.
Yeah, no, it's painful. I mean, I'm actually really curious how they're going to pull it off on the iPad 3, because that thing just has so many pixels.
Such a poor chip.
Yeah, I mean, it was struggling as is. But I do love the effect. And I think they've tuned it, so it's pretty darn efficient.
Older devices seem to turn it off. So my guess is that anything they can't do it really, you know, at the frame per second Apple wants, I'll just have it turned off.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, could they progressively disable stuff? That seems like a smart choice. I mean, in a lot of those situations where you'd have the blur, you could just really have, you know, some transparency in it. It may not look as cool, but it certainly gets the job done.
What do you think the chances are of us getting like a classic mode?
There'll be a jailbreak theme day one, Dave. I'm pretty sure about that.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure of it. But is that, I don't know, it reminds me of like OS 9 to OS 10, where you have all these apps that still look and feel a certain way. You kind of have to support them. Do you think there will be a similar, but on the UI side, version of that, where it's just such a weird change, such a huge collection of changes that people are going to want to dial it back a little bit?
Apple famously didn't put arrows on the Mac so that you couldn't port a command line interface app to it. You'd be forced to make apps that use the new GUI. And I think, you know, a lot of companies, like when Microsoft is being forced to go back and put the home button back in, but I don't know if Apple's that kind of company.
I mean, I guess it would be a demonstration of, or an acknowledgement of weakness on their part if they did something like that. But I just, they're going to get a lot of complaints. A lot of people are going to be very unhappy when they wake up the next morning after hitting the update button in settings and find this.
They could educate, though. I mean, there could be a whole, I mean, I'm guessing there will be a whole slew of material design just to sort of mitigate against that reaction.
Yeah. And on the flip side, there'll be a lot of people who are really excited and happy because they'll be like, oh my God, it looks so different.
I got a new phone.
I've seen a lot of,
because if there's anything people love, it's technology changing out from under them.
So Apple kind of stuck there when they discussed this new design language. There seemed to be three key elements, and I think Johnny Ive called these out specifically. One was clarity; they wanted to make everything clear, and it sounds like, you know, based on our discussion, at least that's the one that's hurting the most. But they also mentioned depth, which they did with the 3D layers, and they mentioned deference, and they wanted the UI to get out of the way. And it was kind of almost a little knock against Metro and Windows 7.8 in this, by saying that they didn't want the design language to be overbearing and affect, you know, stop developers from doing certain things. They wanted to get out of the way of the content, but also out of the way of the apps. Seb, do you see that at all in iOS 7? Is their use of transparency and the minimalism sort of open up the groundwork for, you know, you could maybe make a green felt app and it would look great on iOS 7.
You know, I it's funny actually, because I feel like they're is actually a lot of room to be more creative with stuff. Like, I'm super curious to see what the Tapbots guys will be doing with this UI. I feel like there's some latitude there, but I think it's really key to see where Apple takes this and how much they're going to change and tweak things around before you can really say that with any certainty. Because to be honest, it's almost still feels best when something is kind of native and doesn't like go against the core principles. And the core principles right now are super, super sparse, low decoration. And kind of, I think Jared Sinclair wrote a blog post saying what Apple essentially said is your app's not the content. Whatever is the content in the app is the content. And that's kind of a shift. Like, you know, the app used to be, could really be content in the past. Like, that was part of what you were looking at. And now it's just get out of the way. I just want to see what I'm working with.
And it used to be that there was a real divergence from one app to the next. There was, you know, this app looked different from this app, even just when you bought a brand new phone and opened it up, turned it on for the first time. Now everything kind of has a similar look and feel. And it used to be when, you know, the clock app looked so much different from the calculator, looked so much different from Game Center. It was sort of setting the tone. It was setting the tempo for each app is its own thing. And now it's like the operating system is the thing and you're just playing in their world.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if it's harder, if it's going to be way harder to tell apps apart. I mean, custom UI has been really popular with developers, you know, for one thing, because apps were so, you know, heterogeneous in iOS. And now hopefully we'll see people also trying to make their apps look different, because otherwise with the default UI, it's going to be even harder to tell them apart.
Wasn't the resiliency part of the, I don't want to say the charm, but iOS 6, if you were waking up in the morning with a hangover, blurry vision, you turn on your phone, you saw a contact screen, you could tell immediately if you'd left it in Game Center, if you'd left it in Find My Friends, or if you'd left it in phone.app, because everything, while being standardized, just looked so visually different. And now there's a more similarity of it. So you might lose some of that ability to, you know, be aware of exactly where you are in the phone, which is what I found with Windows Phone. I mean, it was monotonous to the degree that I could no longer tell after a while where I was in the operating system.
Yeah, that was really tricky on Windows Phone. With like different, like I had Viber, Skype, and Phone app on Windows Phone, and eventually they got rolled into one. But like if you have three different dialers, they all look the same pretty much. Yeah. That was tricky.
I mean, Lauren, you've always zigged when everyone is zagged. Does this kind of make you want to be more like iOS 7, or does it make you want to be a little bit more rebellious still?
I still think there's plenty of room for experimentation. I mean, to a degree, you know, they say they want the app to get out of the way and let the content shine through. And, you know, I agree completely with the philosophy, but it almost, I mean, given what they've shown, it's almost like they're just paying lip service to it. You know, there's so much high contrast Chrome, you know, it's like black text and like bright blue buttons, you know, it's yeah, at least with some older apps, you know, it was like, the title bar and the Chrome areas were lower contrast, so you could focus on the content. But now everything's just white, white, white.
Yeah, there's – what was Johnny Ive saying about the software should disappear into the hardware? Now I feel like they're like, well, you know what? Let's just get rid of software entirely. In fact, turn your phone off and just stare at the hardware.
That's minimalist.
Super minimalist. I think they took it a little too far. And I want to be clear that this is not about the way it feels. It feels like $1 million. It just looks like, you know, 350.
Yeah, and again, like early days, first beta, they probably won't launch anything into the fall, so they have 3 or 4 months. Is that enough time to do substantive change, Seb? Like, personally, I would be more worried if the physics were flawed or the interactions were flawed and the icons looked great. But as an outside observer, it feels like the fact that they have sort of the object-oriented interface working, they could repaint the exterior, hopefully in time.
Yeah, you know, it's really puzzling. I mean, you see all the polish that has been done on physics and interactions and such, and it's so disproportionate compared to the amount of work that was done on like some of the visual design, like the icons. Like I heard from a pretty reliable source, and I think it's been going on in the news, that the icons were this time just designed by a graphic design group at Apple, because they were just so short on time, they just had to sort of hand it off. And, you know, I don't know, having worked at Apple at one point and making an app, like designing an app and then seeing it getting released like 2 years later, where it's like not that special of an app. I know Apple doesn't really work that super fast usually. Now, things may have changed a lot, but, you know, deep down, my fear and like what I feel like right now is going to happen is it's just going to ship like pretty much the way it is right now. I don't expect significant change at all, which is too bad.
there was a critique saying that Apple had only 8 months, you know, after Scott Forstall left, it's been 8 months, and, you know, they probably didn't have a firm idea in their head day one what they were going to do. So maybe 7 months, maybe 6 months. And the counter argument was, well, Apple, you know, they didn't have to make this deadline. They created this deadline. They could have, you know, not had iOS 7 at WWDC. But it seems to me that Apple has set expectations to the degree that they kind of had to show off something at this point.
Well, I think that both of those are wrong. There's a third thing that we're missing here, which is that they had a ton of this in place, and what they've changed is visuals. Because again, it's look versus feel. I think the feel is pretty polished, and the feel is pretty good. And I think we've all more or less agreed that we enjoy that. It's the look that we're questioning. So I have to wonder, because of the thing about skeuomorphism and the no digital cows were virtual cows, whatever you said, were harmed. Those all felt like pokes at Forstall, and those were all visual pokes. It didn't seem like they were calling out Forstall for the way something felt before, and they needed to change that. I think that a lot of these, like the parallax effect, it would not surprise me if that's something that's been in the works for a year or more.
And it was sort of quasi unfair because, you know, that wasn't Scott Forstall's sofa that was in Find My Friends.
I also want to point out that I think that it was I think it was dicky to call out Forstall as if he had made some huge mistake with skeuomorphism, when the truth is that even if it is wrong now, it wasn't. And we've had how many years of the iPhone now where that worked really well and helped to build a platform and help people to understand their handheld devices for the first time.
Yeah, it's very, very true. And I think it's a little unfair to make this guy like the ultimate bogeyman of design. Like, it's become sort of like, you know, a verb to like call something, making something like super gaudy and bad visual design on a mobile device. It's like, oh man, you know, that guy really forestalled it.
yeah. And I think Forstall made some mistakes, but I don't think that Green Felt and Game Center was the sin that he should be crucified for.
And the man gave us Carbon, and he helped us get an app store. There's a lot of merit in his career at Apple, too.
Yeah. So this one, they never said Forstall on the keynote. They never would, but it was a clear, I mean, you read between the lines, and that's the name you see. And I think that was a little unfair. I think it's a little unfair. Even Apple pointing back at Apple, like if the public view is that Apple was saying, well, we were doing this and now we're going to make fun of it and it's a step forward. That's great, but it seems like too much focus on the past and not enough focus on the future.
Yeah, it felt a little bit like that one time when Steve took a dig at the Mobile Me team on stage. It was like, oh, that almost hurt for everybody. I don't know what keynote that was, but ouch.
Lauren, where do you see this going forward? I mean, is this is what we're seeing today just the beginning of the direction that Apple is going? Will there be even more sort of direct manipulation, objectified operating system, that kind of feeling?
Yeah, I think it's inevitable because there's really no other way to engineer these kinds of rich interfaces. You know, programming them brute force like the way we've been doing, it's unsustainable. So, I mean, building a physics-like system makes a ton of sense. I mean, I kind of look at OS 7 as ripping off the Band-Aid. You know, it's going to sting a little bit, but, you know, it's good in the long run.
And I'm curious to see what the developer, I mean, the App Store shipped 2008, and we saw a lot of UIKit apps initially. Everything sort of looked like UIKit. And then fast forward 3-4 years, and you had things like Letterpress and things like Vesper and things like that looked completely different from any design language Apple ever envisioned. And 6 months from now, 12 months from now, using these tools, I just wonder how far developers will take us.
You know, that actually raises a sort of separate question, and not that I don't want to answer your question, but a separate question, which is that the thing earlier about how all of these stock apps now kind of have the same look, could it be that that's the template? Could that just be that that's stock UI, like the crappy stock UI we used to get, and now they're going to go off and they're going to make these things each their own individual, unique, and beautiful snowflake?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a cycle. You know, we're going to see, you know, Apple sets the standard, and then third parties are going to go and innovate like crazy. And then in a few years, it's going to resynthesize, and then there's going to be another, you know, mini big bang.
Is it almost like the TikTok development cycle, where 1 year you radically change the architecture, then the next year you improve on that change and make something really fantastic?
Yeah, but rippling through the entire ecosystem, maybe.
Yeah, and I hate to always draw the parallel to Android, but, you know, a few years ago I saw the guys at Google announcing Honeycomb, which was their first like attempt at making a new, really finding a visual identity for their platform. And I mean, it did, you know, you can say what you want, but it really sucked. Like, it was just bad. It was undefined. It was just gaudy. It looked like Tron. It was unfriendly. At the same time, there was a fundamental thing there where they were like, okay, you know, we're really going to work on this. everybody was like, yeah, you guys have been designing your visual, redesigning your OS every 6 months, whatever. But they really stuck to it. And now, you know, almost 3 years later, we've got, dare I say it, a semi-good-looking, well-working Android OS. And so there's some beautiful parts in there, like Google Now and stuff. Like, it's become legitimately a friendly OS with a nice, unique visual style. And I think, you know, we have to give iOS some time, too, to really find itself in its new body and get nice.
I feel bad for the people who do the stock Android OS because almost no one's going to see it because Samsung and HTC are going to shellac right over it. They put all this work into it just to have someone go and rip it out and put other stuff on top of it.
Yeah, that must hurt.
Lauren, you've mentioned before, we've actually had podcasted before about the future of interactive design. And we talked about Google Now, and we talked about Siri, and Siri got a bit of a UI makeover. It doesn't seem as card-centric as it used to be in the way that Google Now is, but it does seem like Apple is starting to do more with Siri. And I kind of hope they really continue with that, because I think for so many people, that is going to be part of the next level of interaction.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Sadly, I haven't played too much with the iOS 7 version of it.
Well, they announced there's going to be new voices, which is nice because they used the stock voice to such an extent that people could make fun of them on commercials with it, which probably wasn't a great thing, but they're doing their own voice now. They have the modular wave, almost like the original voice control app had, and it looks like they're going to be experimenting with they have new partners to it, but it looks like they're going to be doing more things. Like you can change your settings with it now, and they have partnerships with more people, I think, and it looks like maybe they'll start bringing in more of that context awareness to it.
Yeah, I mean, the new voice does sound insanely good. They did that in-house?
I don't know, because I think it's been confirmed now that they're still licensing all that from Nuance, and I don't know how much they're allowed to do as opposed to how much they have to have Nuance do.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Which to me is still the big drawback, because Google has their own in-house team for that, and they can do almost anything that they can conceive of, where Apple, who likes to own their technology, you know, still can't.
Yeah.
So I guess before we wrap up, Dave, what's your state of the iOS 7 beta big picture? Should people just calm down and not worry about it so much? Should they be yelling as loudly as possible? Is it a mixed bag?
I think that people should be calm in their expectations, but very vocal in their desires.
Nice.
Like the things that you don't like, scream at Apple and let them know that you don't like them. But also, let's be reasonable about these things and understand we're seeing a first beta and we have no idea what's coming.
Yeah, visually, I say it's just not finished. Behind the scenes, there's a ton of really exciting stuff that's going to trickle to the surface, and that's going to take years.
I think, if anything, this is the biggest mobile OS that's ever been released that is completely ahead to developers to make into something really, really cool. Because as Lauren said, there's super, super cool stuff under the hood here. I can't wait to see developers take that away. iOS has always really been the platform of apps. So I honestly am super excited to see what developers are going to do with this. And I'm really, really hopeful that Apple will polish this a lot more before they throw it out there. And in the meantime, I'll be making a lot of noise to make sure that that's heard in a constructive way.
So actually, I meant to end on that, but Seb, you raised an interesting point that I forgot to ask you guys. App launches have been around. I think the Newton had one, the Mac had one. A lot of, you know, Android has its app drawer, but its home screen is different. People have been experimenting with different modalities, and here, and I'll start with you, Dave, again. Here it is, 2013, and Apple's principal interactive model is still the app launcher. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's a good thing. They put so much time and effort into marketing the idea of apps. And at the apps are the phone. The phone is it's a way of it's an app delivery system. It's an app vehicle, and to put the focus on apps still makes perfect sense to me, and to I think most users.
Man, I could talk about the philosophy behind, you know, computing for hours. I mean, fundamentally, I think it's completely flawed and totally the wrong direction, but. It's not the kind of thing that you can ease away from. You need something really radical to, yeah. No, I mean, long term, it's a dead end.
Long term, do you think we could get, and I don't want to go too far in tangent, do you think we can get to a point where there is really no primary interface anymore and we're using a combination of natural language and direct manipulation to sort of circumvent the idea of launching apps or, you know, hitting people or whatever the Windows Phone, iOS, Android modality is now?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can only vaguely agree because I don't think anyone's really sure exactly what that looks like. I mean, it's something I've been looking at for a while.
And it looks like we're in an era of great experimentation because everyone is at least trying different things now, which is not always the case.
With all the new tech that's coming out and stuff, I think it's definitely safe to say, like Lauren said, we know that the current home screen is a really flawed, you know, concept. But when it's going to change, we know that there's going to be some new hardware and stuff to come with that. And yeah, that's going to be really exciting. So then, can't say much about it. It's a very uncertain, very cool future that's ahead of us.
So what you're all saying is I'm going to have to take a Ethernet cable and jack it into the back of my neck eventually. And
that'll all be wireless.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Thank you guys so much for joining us. Dave, where can people find out more about you and your work?
On Twitter, I am at DWiscus. I have a podcast called Unprofessional, unprofesh.com, or I make an app called Vesper at vesperapp.co.
Lauren?
Lauren B on Twitter or 8bits.com.
And Seb?
I'm SDW on Twitter and DeWith, DEWITH.com.
All right, guys, thank you so much. If nothing else, what I'm most excited about is that it's something different and change is always exciting. And we have 3-4 months until launch. And I'm really curious to see beta 2, 3, 4, 5, however many we get. And then the final product, which will hopefully come with that, you know, beginning the inkling of that next generation hardware. Thank you very much, guys.
Cool. Thank you.
Thank you.